said. Brilliant, I said. How do you come up with this stuff? Missing my sarcasm, she sat taller with self-satisfaction. I saw you made the homecoming ballot, she said. I said nothing. The lilt of her voice didn't appear to be making fun, but 11 years worth of history between us implied differently. Who do you think will win male junior attendant? She kept on. My bet's on Cameron Feria. Hopefully they've dry-cleaned the royalty rub since last year. I have it on good authority that Cara Darling left armpit sweat marks inside her robe. What if you had to wear her old robe? She wrinkled her nose. If she did that to her robe, I'd hate to see what she did to the tiara. My mind unwillingly traveled back to the only homecoming I'd attended. V and I had gone as freshmen. We'd been newly anointed high schoolers, and it only seemed appropriate to see what all the fuss was about. At halftime, the Booster Club marched onto the field and announced the royalty, starting with the freshman attendants and ending with the senior class queen and king. Each member of the royalty had a robe in school colors placed on their shoulders and a crown or tiara shoved on their head. Then they took a victory lap around the track in golf carts. High class, I know. Marcy won freshman attendant and soured any desire I had to attend another coronation. I nominated you. Marcy flipped her hair off her shoulders, giving me the full wattage of her smile. I was going to keep it a secret, but anonymity isn't my thing. Her words whipped me out of my reflection. You did what? She tried on a sympathetic face. I know you're going through a rough period. I mean, first the whole amnesia thing and... She dropped her voice to a whisper. I know about the hallucinations, my dad told me. He said I should be extra nice to you, only I wasn't sure how. I thought and thought, and then I saw the announcement about nominating this year's homecoming royalty. Obviously, everyone wanted to nominate me, but I told my friends we should nominate you instead. I might have mentioned the hallucinations, and I might have exaggerated their severity. You gotta play dirty to win. Good news is, we got over 200 signatures, more than any other nominee. My mind reeled, tottering between incredulity and disgust. You made me your charity project? Yes, she squealed, clapping her hands daintily. I bent across the aisle, pinning her with my most hardened and severe look. Go to the office and retract it. I don't want my name on the ballot. Instead of looking wounded, Marcy put her hands on her hips. That would mess up everything. They've already printed the ballots. I peeked at the stack in the front office this morning. Do you want to be a paper waster? Think of the trees that sacrificed their lives for those reams of paper. And what's more, screw the paper. What about me? I went out of my way to do something nice, and you can't just reject that. I tipped my neck back, glowering at the water stains on the ceiling. Why me? Chapter 23. After school, I found a note tacked to the front door. Barn. I stuffed the note into my pocket and headed to the backyard. The split rail fence at the edge of our property opened to a sprawling field. A whitewashed barn was plunked down in the middle of it. To this day, I wasn't sure who the barn belonged to. Years ago, V and I had dreamed of turning it into a secret clubhouse. Our ambitions quickly died the first time we hauled open the doors to find a bat hanging from the rafters. I hadn't tried to enter the barn since, and even though I hoped I could say I was no longer terrified of small flying mammals, I found myself opening the door with great hesitation. Hello? I called in. Scott was stretched out on a weathered bench at the back of the barn. Upon my entrance, he pulled himself up to sitting. You still mad at me? He asked, chewing a piece of wild grass. If it weren't for the Metallica t-shirt and frayed jeans, he might have looked like he belonged seated behind the wheel of a tractor. I skimmed the rafters. Did you see any bats when you came in? Scott grinned. Scared of bats, Gray? I dropped down on the bench beside him. Quit calling me Gray. It makes me sound like I'm a boy, like Dorian Gray. Dorian who? I sighed. Just think up something else. Plain old Nora works too, you know. Sure thing, Gumdrop. I grimaced. I take that back. Let's stick with Gray. I came by to see if you have anything for me. Information on Hank would be good. Do you think he knows it was us spying on his building that night? I was pretty sure Hank didn't suspect us. He hadn't acted any creepier than usual, which, in retrospect, wasn't saying much. No, I think we're clear. That's good. Real good, Scott said, twisting the black hand's ring around his finger. I was glad to see he hadn't taken it off. Maybe I can come out of hiding earlier than I thought. Looks to me like you're out of hiding now. How did you know I'd find your note on the front door before Hank? Hank's at his dealership, and I know when you get home from school. Don't take this the wrong way, but I've been checking up on you now and then. I needed to know the best times to contact you. By the way, your social life is pathetic. Speak for yourself. Scott laughed, but when I didn't join in, he nudged my shoulder. You seem down, Gray. I heaved a sigh. Marcy Miller nominated me for homecoming royalty. Voting happens this Friday. He gave me one of those complex handshakes that college fraternities use on TV. Well done, champ. I gave him a look of pure disgust. Hey now, I thought girls loved this stuff. Shopping for a dress, getting your hair done, wearing the little crown thing on your head. Tiara. Yeah, tiara, I do that. So what's to hate? I feel stupid having my name on a ballot with four other girls who are actually popular. I'm not gonna win. I'm just going to look stupid. People are already asking if it was a misprint, and I don't have a date. I guess I could take V. Marcy'll come up with 100 lesbian jokes, but worse things could happen. Scott spread his arms wide as though the solution was obvious. Problem solved. Go with me. I rolled my eyes, suddenly regretting bringing up the topic. It was the last thing I wanted to talk about. Right now, denial seemed the only way to go. You don't even go to school, I reminded him. Is there a rule about that? Girls at my old school in Portland were always dragging their college boyfriends back to dances. There's not a rule, per se. He considered briefly. If you're worried about the Black Hand, the last time I checked, Nephilim dictators don't consider human high school dances a top priority. He'll never know I was there. At the image of Hank trolling the school gym, I couldn't help but laugh. You laugh, but you haven't seen me in a tux. Or maybe you don't like broad-shouldered guys with muscular chests and washboard abs. I bit my lip to conquer another, harder laugh. Quit intimidating me. You're starting to make this sound like a role reversal of Beauty and the Beast. We all know you're beautiful, Scott. Scott gave my knee an affectionate squeeze. You'll never hear me admit this again, so listen up. You look good, Gray. On a scale from 1 to 10, you're definitely in the top half. Gee, thanks. You're not the kind of girl I would have chased after when I was in Portland, but I'm not the same guy I was back then either. You're a little too good for me, and let's face it, a little too smart. You've got street smarts, I pointed out. Stop interrupting. You're going to make me lose my place. You've got this speech memorized? A smirk. I've got a lot of time on my hands. As I was saying, hell, I forgot where I was. You were telling me I can rest assured that I'm better looking than half the girls at my school. That was a figure of speech. If you want to get technical, you're better looking than 90%, give or take. I laid a hand over my heart. I'm speechless. Scott got down on his knee and clasped my hand dramatically. Yes, Nora. Yes, I'll go to the homecoming dance with you. I snorted down at him. You were so full of yourself. I never asked. See, too smart. Anyway, what's the big deal? You need a date, and while I might not be your number one choice, I'll do. A clear image of Patch appeared in my thoughts, but I swept it aside. Logically, I knew there was no way Scott could read my mind, but that didn't ease my guilt. I wasn't ready to tell him just yet that I was no longer working exclusively with him to bring down Hank. I'd enrolled the help of my ex-boyfriend, who just so happened to be twice as resourceful, twice as dangerous, the embodiment of masculine perfection, and a fallen angel. Hurting Scott was the last thing I wanted. Quite unexpectedly, he'd grown on me. And while I found it odd that Scott had suddenly decided complacency was the way to go with Hank, I didn't have the heart to tell him that he wasn't allowed one night of fun. As he'd said, the homecoming dance would be the last thing on Hank's radar. Okay, okay, I said, giving him a playful jab to the shoulder. It's a date. I put on a serious face. But you'd better not be exaggerating about how fine you look in a tux. It wasn't until later that night that I realized I'd failed to tell Scott about Hank's decoy building and the real Nephilim safe house. Who would have thought homecoming would weigh on my thoughts more heavily than stumbling inside a barracks of armed Nephilim? It was times like this when having Scott's cell phone number would have come in really useful. On second thought, I wasn't sure Scott had a cell. Phones were traceable. At 6, I sat down to dinner with Mom. How was your day? She asked. I can tell you it was absolutely fantastic if you want, I said, chewing a bite of baked ziti. Oh dear, did the Volkswagen break down again? I thought it was very generous of Hank to fix it, and I'm sure he'd offer to help out again if you asked. At my mom's blind admiration of Hank, I had to exhale slowly to regain my composure. Worse, Marcy nominated me for homecoming royalty. Worse yet, I made the ballot. Mom lowered her fork. She looked stunned. Are we talking about the same Marcy? She said Hank told her about the hallucinations, and she's made me her new charity case. I didn't tell Hank about the hallucinations. That would have been me, she said, blinking in surprise. I can't believe he shared that information with Marcy. I distinctly remember telling him to keep it private. She opened her mouth, then slowly closed it. At least, I'm almost positive I did. She set down her utensils with a clink. I swear, old age is getting the better of me. I can't seem to remember anything anymore. Please don't blame Hank. I take full responsibility. I couldn't bear to see my mom lost and bewildered. Old age had nothing to do with her inability to remember. I had no doubt in my mind that Patch was right. She was under Hank's influence. I wondered if he was mind-tricking her day by day, or if he'd instilled in her a general sense of obedience and loyalty. Don't worry about it, I murmured. I had a piece of ziti poised on my fork, but I'd lost my appetite. Patch had told me there wasn't any use in trying to explain the truth to my mom. She wouldn't believe me. But that didn't keep me from wanting to scream out in frustration. I wasn't sure how much longer I could keep up the charade, eating, sleeping, smiling, as if nothing were wrong. Mom said, "This must be why Hank suggested you and Marcy go dress shopping together. I told him I'd be very surprised if you had any desire to go to homecoming, but he must have known what Marcy was planning. Of course, you're under no obligation to go anywhere with Marcy," she corrected in a rush. "I think it would be very big of you, but clearly Hank doesn't know how you feel about Marcy. I think he dreams of seeing our families get along." She gave a miserable little laugh. Under the circumstances, I couldn't bring myself to join her. I didn't know how much of what she said was from the heart and how much was dictated by Hank's mind tricks. But it was very clear that if she was thinking marriage, Patch and I needed to work faster. Marcy cornered me after school and told me, yes, told me, we're going dress shopping tonight. Like I had absolutely no say in the matter whatsoever. But it's all good, V and I have a plan. I texted Marcy and told her I couldn't go shopping because I'm out of money. Then I told her how sorry I was because I was really looking forward to her input. She texted back and said Hank gave her his credit card and she was paying. Mom groaned in disapproval, but her eyes crinkled with amusement. Please tell me I raised you better than this. I already picked out the dress I want, I said cheerfully. I'll get Marcy to pay for it, and then V will just happen to bump into us as we're leaving the store. I'll take the dress, ditch Marcy, and go out for donuts with V. What does the dress look like? V and I found it at Silk Garden. It's an above-the-knee party dress. What color? You'll have to wait and see, I smiled devilishly. It's $150. Mom waved this off. I'd be surprised if Hank even notices. You should see how he burns through cash. I settled higher in my chair, pleased with myself. Then I don't suppose he'll mind buying my shoes, too. I was supposed to meet Marcy at Silk Garden at 7. Silk Garden was a boutique dress shop on the corner of Asher and 10th. From the outside, it resembled a chateau, with an oak and iron door and a cobblestone walk. The trees were wrapped in blue decorative lights. In the front windows, mannequins modeled dresses beautiful enough to eat. When I was little, my dreams of grandeur included becoming a princess and claiming Silk Garden as my castle. At 7:20, I paced the parking lot, scouting for Marcy's car. Marcy drove a red Toyota 4Runner fully loaded. Somehow I got the feeling her shifter never popped out of its socket. I doubted she'd ever had to smack her dashboard for 10 minutes straight before the engine caught, and I was willing to bet her ride never broke down halfway to school. I cast a gloomy look in the direction of the Volkswagen and sighed. A red 4Runner swerved into the parking lot, and Marcy jumped out. "Sorry I'm late," she said, throwing her handbag up her shoulder. "My dog didn't want me to leave." "Your dog?" "Boomer. Dogs are people, too, you know." I saw my chance. "No worries. I already looked around inside, picked out my dress, too. We can make this real quick, and you can get back to Boomer." Her face fell. "What about my input? You said you valued my opinion." "I pretty much just value your dad's credit card." "Yeah, about that. I had every intention of waiting for you, but then I saw the dress. It spoke to me." "Really?" "Yes, Marcy. The heavens opened and angels sang hallelujah." In my mind, I smacked my head against a wall. "Show me the dress," she directed. You realize you have a warm skin tone, right? The wrong color is going to wash you out. Inside, I walked Marcy over to the dress. It was a party dress with an all-over green and navy tartan print and a ruched skirt. The sales lady had said it made my legs stand out. V said it made me look like I actually had a chest. Ew, Marcy said. Tartan? Too, schoolgirl. Well, it's the one I want. She flipped through the rack, grabbing one in my size. Maybe it will look better on, but I don't think I'll change my mind. I carted the dress back to the fitting room with a bounce in my step. This was the dress. Marcy could huff all night. She wasn't going to change my mind. I shucked off my jeans and shimmied into the dress. I couldn't get the zipper up. I twisted the dress around and looked at the tag. Size 4. Maybe an honest mistake? Maybe not. To give Marcy the finger, I stuffed the fat of my midsection into the dress. For a minute, it looked like it might work. Then reality set in. Marcy, I called through the drape. Hmm? I passed the dress out to her. Wrong size. Too big? Her voice was laced with an overkill of naivete. I blew hair off my face to keep from saying something cynical. A size 6 will do, thank you very much. Oh, too small. It was a good thing I was in my underwear, or I'd have been tempted to march out and slug her. A minute later, Marcy pushed a size 6 through the drapes. On its heels, she passed in a floor-length red number. Not to sway the vote, but I think red is the way to go. More glam. I hung the dress on the hook, stuck my tongue out at it, and zipped myself into the tartan party dress. I twirled in front of the mirror and mouthed a silent squeal. I imagined myself descending the farmhouse stairs on homecoming night while Scott looked on from below. All of a sudden, I wasn't picturing Scott. Patch leaned on the banister, dressed in a tailored black suit and silver tie. I gave him a flirty smile. He held out his arm and escorted me to the door. He smelled warm and earthy, like sun-baked sand. Unable to control myself, I grabbed his jacket lapels and hauled him into a kiss. I could get you to smile like that, and without sales tax. I whirled around to find the real Patch standing in the fitting room behind me. He was wearing jeans and a snug white tee. His arms were folded loosely over his chest, and his black eyes smiled down at me. Heat that wasn't entirely uncomfortable flushed through my body. I could make all kinds of pervert jokes right now, I quipped. I could tell you how much I like you in that dress. How did you get in? I move in mysterious ways. God moves in mysterious ways. You move like lightning. Here one moment, gone the next. How long have you been standing there? I would die of mortification if he'd watched me try to cram myself into a size 4, not to mention watching me strip down. I would have knocked, but I didn't want to linger outside and risk Marcy. Hank can't know you and I are back in business. I tried not to overanalyze what back in business meant. I have news, Patch said. I reached out to Dabria. She's agreed to help us run interference on Hank, but first I need to come clean. Dabria is more than an old acquaintance. We knew each other before I fell. It was a relationship of convenience, but not too long ago, she caused you a fair share of inconvenience. He paused, which is a nice way of saying she tried to kill you. Oh, boy. She's over her jealousy, but I wanted you to know, he finished. Well, now I know, I said a little tartly. I wasn't especially proud of my sudden insecurity, but couldn't he have told me this before he called her? How do we know she's not going to play assassin again? He smiled. I took out an insurance policy. Sounds vague. Have a little faith. What does she look like? And now I'd stooped from plain old insecure to superficial. Stringy, unwashed hair, doughy around the middle, unibrow. He grinned. Satisfied? I wondered if that translated into curvy and gorgeous with the brains of an astrophysicist. Have you met with her in person yet? Won't be necessary. What I want from her isn't complicated. Before she fell, Dabria was an angel of death and could see the future. She claims she still has the gift and makes decent money at it from, believe it or not, her Nephilim clients. I figured out where he was going with this. She's going to keep her ear to the ground. She's going to eavesdrop on her clients and see what pops up on Hank. Good work, Angel. How does Dabria expect to be paid? Let me handle that. I stood, hands on hips. Wrong answer, Patch. Dabria has no interest in me anymore. She's motivated by cold, hard cash. He closed the space between us, running his finger affectionately along the inside of my necklace. and I'm not interested in her anymore. I've set my eyes elsewhere. I steered clear of his hand, knowing full well the seductive power his touch had of erasing even my most important trains of thought. Can she be trusted? I'm the one who ripped out her wings when she fell. I have one of her feathers for safekeeping, and she knows it. Unless she wants to spend the rest of eternity keeping Rickson company, she's going to be motivated to stay on my good side. The insurance policy. Bingo. His lips grazed mine. I can't stay long. I'm working a few other leads, and I'll get back to you if they pan out. Will you be home tonight?
Yes, I said hesitantly. But aren't you worried about Hank? These days he's about as permanent in my house as a light fixture.
I can work around him, he said with a mysterious gleam in his eyes. I'll be coming in through your dreams.
I cocked my head, evaluating him. Is this a joke?
For it to work, you have to be open to the idea. We're off to a promising start.
I waited for the punchline, but it quickly dawned on me that he was dead serious. How does it work? I asked skeptically.
You dream, and I insert myself into it. Don't try to block me, and we'll be good to go.
I wondered if I should tell him I had a stellar track record of not blocking him when it came to my dreams.
One last thing, he said. I have it on good authority that Hank knows Scott is in town. I wouldn't think twice about it if he were caught, but I know he means something to you. Tell him to keep his head down. Hank doesn't think highly of deserters.
Once again, having a legitimate way to reach Scott would be useful. On the other side of the drape, I heard Marcy arguing with a sales lady, probably over something as trivial as a smidgen of dust on the full-length mirrors. Does Marcy know what her dad really is?
Marcy lives in a bubble, but Hank keeps threatening to pop it.
He inclined his head at my dress.
What's the occasion?
Homecoming, I said, twirling.
Like? Last I heard, homecoming requires a date.
About that, I hedged. I'm sort of going with Scott. We both figure a high school dance as the last place Hank will be patrolling. Patch smiled, but it was tight.
I take that back. If Hank wants to shoot Scott, he has my blessing.
We're just friends.
He tipped my chin up and kissed me. Keep it that way.
He unhooked his aviator sunglasses from his shirt and slid them over his eyes.
Don't tell Scott I didn't warn him. I have to roll, but I'll be in touch.
He ducked out, and he was gone. Chapter 24. After Patch left, I decided it was time to stop playing princess and change back into my ordinary clothes. I'd just tugged my shirt over my head when I knew something wasn't right, and then it hit me. My handbag was gone. I looked under the plush bench, but it wasn't there. Even though I was almost positive I hadn't hung it on a hook, I looked behind the red dress. Shoving my feet into my shoes, I flung back the drape and hustled out to the main store area. I found Marcy tearing her way through a rack of push-up bras. Have you seen my handbag? She paused long enough to say, You took it into the dressing room with you. A sales lady bustled over.
Was it a brown leather saddlebag? She asked me.
Yes.
I just saw a man leaving the store with it. He came in without saying a word, and I assumed he was your father.
She touched her head, frowning.
In fact, I could have sworn he said he was, but maybe I imagined the whole thing, the whole moment felt so strange. My head feels fuzzy, I can't explain it.
A mind trick, I thought. She added,
He had gray hair and was wearing an argyle sweater.
Which way did he go? I cut her off.
Out the front doors, heading toward the parking lot.
I ran outside. I could hear Marcy on my heels.
Do you think this is a good idea? She panted. I mean, what if he has a gun? What if he's mentally unstable?
What kind of man steals a purse from under a dressing room door? I demanded out loud.
Maybe he was desperate. Maybe he needed cash.
Then he should have taken your bag.
Everyone knows Silk Garden is posh, Marcy rationalized. He probably figured he'd score big no matter which bag he grabbed.
What I couldn't tell Marcy was that he was most likely either Nephilim or a fallen angel, and instinct told me he was motivated by something bigger than a potential handful of cash. We ran into the parking lot just as a black sedan backed out of a parking space. The glare of its headlights made it impossible to see behind the windshield. The engine revved and the car gunned toward us. Marcy yanked on my sleeve.
Move, you idiot!
Tires squealing, the car floored past us onto the street. The driver ran the stop sign, switched off his lights, and vanished into the night.
Did you see what kind of car it was?
asked Marcy. An Audi A6. I got a partial on the license plate. Marcy appraised me up and down.
Not bad, Tiger.
I gave her a look of pure irritation. Not bad? He got away with my handbag. Don't you find it a little odd that a guy who drives a flashy Audi needs to steal handbags? My handbag in particular? Which begged the question, what did an immortal want with my handbag?
Was it designer? Try Target.
Marcy hitched her shoulders.
Well, that was exciting. What now? Drop it and get back to shopping?
I'm calling the police. 30 minutes later, a patrol car pulled up to the curb in front of Silk Garden and Detective Basso swung out. Suddenly, I wished I'd taken Marcy's advice and dropped the whole thing. My night had just gone from bad to worse. Marcy and I were inside, pacing by the windows, and Detective Basso came in and found us. His eyes showed initial surprise upon seeing me, and when he ran his hand over his mouth, I was pretty sure it was to hide a smile. Someone stole my handbag, I informed him.
Walk me through this, he said.
I went into the fitting room to try on homecoming dresses. When I finished, I noticed my handbag wasn't on the floor where I'd left it. I came out, and the sales lady told me she'd seen a man running off with it.
He had gray hair and an Argyle sweater, the sales lady offered helpfully.
Any credit cards in the purse?
Detective Basso asked.
No.
Cash?
No.
Total value of missing items?
$75.
The handbag had cost only 20, but standing in line for 2 hours to get a new driver's license had to be worth at least 50.
I'll file a report, but there's not a lot we can do. Best case scenario, the guy ditches the bag and someone turns it in. Worst case, you buy yourself a new bag.
Marcy linked her arm through mine.
Look on the bright side, she said, patting my hand. You lost a cheap bag, but you're getting a swanky dress.
She handed me a dress bag with the Silk Garden logo. It's all taken care of. You can thank me later. I peered inside the bag. The floor-length red gown hung neatly inside. I was in my bedroom and I was forking down a piece of chocolate cake. I was evil-eyeing the red dress which I'd hung on the closet door. I hadn't tried it on yet, but I had the distinct vision that I was going to look eerily like Jessica from Who Framed Roger Rabbit, minus the D-cups. I brushed my teeth, splashed water on my face, and dabbed on eye cream. Saying goodnight to my mom, I padded down the hall to my bedroom, buttoned myself into a cute pair of flannel PJs from Victoria's Secret, and cut the lights. Taking Patch's advice, I cleared my mind and prepared for sleep. Patch said he could come inside my dreams, but I had to be open to the idea. I was a little bit skeptical, a little bit hopeful, and not the least bit opposed. After the night I'd had, the only thing I could imagine making me feel better was having Patch take me into his arms. Better in a dream than not at all. Lying in bed, I reflected on my day, letting my subconscious twist the memories into phantoms of dreams. My mind toyed with bits of dialogue, flashes of color. Suddenly, I was standing in the dressing room at Silk Garden with Patch. Only in this version, he had his fingers hooked in the belt loops of my jeans, and my fingers were mussing up his hair. Our mouths were an inch apart, and I could feel the warmth of his breath. The dream had almost towed me under completely when I felt my blankets being dragged off my body. I sat up to find Patch standing over my bed. He was wearing the same jeans and white tee I'd seen him in earlier, and he balled up my blankets, tossing them aside. A smile lit his eyes.
Sweet dreams.
I looked around. Everything in my room was just as it should be. The door was shut, the nightlight on, my clothes were draped over the rocking chair where I'd left them, and the Jessica Rabbit dress still hung from the closet door. Despite no visible evidence, something felt not quite right. Is this real? I asked Patch. Or a dream?
Dream.
I gave an appreciative laugh.
Wow. Could have fooled me. It's so real.
Most dreams are. It isn't until you wake up that you see all the plot holes.
Talk me through this.
I'm in the landscape of your dream. Imagine that your subconscious and mine walked through a door you created in your mind. We're in the room together, but it's not a physical place. The room is imagined, but our thoughts aren't. You decided the setting and the clothes you're wearing, and you decide everything you say. But since I'm actually in the dream with you, as opposed to a version of myself that you dreamed up, the things I say and do aren't the work of your imagination. I control those things.
I was pretty sure I understood enough to get by. Are we safe here?
If you're asking if Hank will spy on us, no, most likely not.
But if you can do this, what's stopping him from doing it? I know he's Nephilim, and unless I'm way off here, it seems like fallen angels and Nephilim have a lot of the same powers.
Until I tried invading your dreams a few months ago, I didn't know much about how the process works. I've since learned it requires a strong connection between both subjects. I also know the dreaming subject has to be deep under. The timing can get tricky and requires patience. If you invade too early, the subject will wake up. If two angels or Nephilim or any combination of the two invade a dream at the same time, pushing and pulling with their own agendas, the dreamer is far more likely to wake up. Whether or not you like it, Hank has a strong connection to you. But if he hasn't tried invading your dreams yet, I don't think he'll start this late in the game.
How did you learn all of this?
Trial and error.
He hesitated, as though meaning to tread carefully with his next words.
I also got a little outside help from a fallen angel who recently fell. Unlike me, she had a strong grasp on angel law before she fell. I wouldn't be surprised if she has the Book of Enoch, a tome about the history of angels, memorized. I knew if anyone had answers, she did. After a little arm-twisting, she told me.
His face was a mask of indifference.
She, meaning Dabria.
My heart gave an unpleasant twist. I didn't want to be jealous of Patch's ex. Obviously, I understood there was no way he didn't have some kind of romantic history. But I felt an overpowering aversion to Dabria. Maybe residual anger, she had tried to kill me. Or maybe instinct telling me she wouldn't hesitate to betray us again.
So you met her in person after all?
I asked accusingly.
We ran into each other today, and while I had her, I decided to get to the bottom of a few questions that have been weighing on my mind. I've been looking for a way to communicate with you undetected, and I wasn't going to waste the opportunity that she might provide answers.
I hardly heard him. Why did she track you down?
She didn't say, and it's not important. We got what we wanted, and that's what I care about. We now have a private form of communication.
Did she still look doughy around the middle? Patch rolled his eyes. I was acutely aware that he'd dodged my question. Has she been to your studio?
This is starting to feel like 20 questions, Angel.
In other words, she has.
No, she hasn't, Patch answered patiently. Can we be done talking about Dabria?
When do I get to meet her? And tell her to keep her hands off. Patch scratched his cheek, and I thought I saw his mouth twitch.
Probably not a good idea.
What's that supposed to mean? You don't think I can handle myself, do you? Thanks for the vote of confidence, I said, seething at him and my own stupid insecurities.
I think Dabria is a narcissist and an egomaniac. Best to stay away.
Maybe you should take your own advice. I started to whirl away, but Patch hooked my arm and brought me around to face him. He pressed his forehead to mine. I started to pull away, but he laced his fingers through mine, effectively trapping me against him.
What do I have to do to convince you I'm using Dabria for one thing and one thing only? To break down Hank, piece by piece if I have to, and make him pay for everything he's done to hurt the girl I love.
I don't trust Dabria, I said, still clinging to some of my indignation. He shut his eyes, and I thought I heard the softest of sighs.
Finally, something we agree on.
I don't think we should use her, even if she can get to Hank's inner circle faster than you or me.
If we had more time or another option, I'd jump on it. But for now, she's our best chance. She won't double-cross me. She's too smart. She'll take the cash I'm offering and walk away, even if it hurts her pride.
I don't like it. I snuggled into Patch, and even in the dream, the warmth of his body effectively cast away any lingering chill. But I trust you. He kissed me, long and reassuring. Something strange happened tonight, I said. Someone stole my handbag from the dressing room at Silk Garden. Patch immediately frowned.
This happened after I left?
Either that or right before you came.
Did you see who took it?
No, but the sales lady said he was male and old enough to be my father. She let him stroll right out with it, but I think he may have mind-tricked her. Do you think it's a coincidence that an immortal stole my handbag?
I don't think anything is a coincidence. What did Marcy see?
Apparently nothing, even though the shop was practically empty. I gauged his eyes, cool and calculating. You think Marcy was involved, don't you?
Hard to believe she didn't see something. It's starting to feel like the whole night was a setup. When you went into the dressing room, she could have placed a call letting the thief know it was safe to come in. She could have seen your bag underneath the drape and walked him through the theft step by step.
Why would she want my bag? Unless... I stopped. She thought I was carrying the necklace Hank wants, I realized. He's roped her into this. She was playing fetch for him. Patch's mouth was set in a grim line.
He's not beneath putting his daughter in harm's way.
His eyes flickered to mine.
He proved that with you.
Are you still convinced Marcy doesn't know what Hank really is?
She doesn't know, not yet. Hank could have lied to her about why he needed the necklace. He could have told her it belongs to him and she wouldn't ask questions. Marcy isn't the type to ask questions. If she sees a target, she turns into a pit bull.
Pit bull. Tell me about it. There's one more thing. I got a look at the car before the thief drove away. It was an Audi A6. From the look in his eyes, I knew the information meant something to him.
Hank's right-hand man, a Nafil named Blakely, drives an Audi.
A shiver chased up my spine. I'm starting to get a little freaked out. He obviously thinks he can use the necklace to force the Archangel to talk. What does he need her to tell him? What does she know that he'd risk the retaliation of the Archangels for?
And this close to Heshvan, Patch murmured, a look of distraction clouding his eyes.
We could try to break the Archangel out, I suggested. That way, even if Hank gets a necklace, he won't have an Archangel.
I'd thought of that, but we're facing two big problems. First, the Archangel trusts me even less than Hank, and if she sees me anywhere near her cage, she's going to make a lot of racket. Second, Hank's warehouse is crawling with his men. I'd need my own army of fallen angels to go against them, and I'm going to have a hard time talking fallen angels into helping me rescue an Archangel.
Our conversation seemed to dead end there, and we both contemplated our slim list of options in silence.
What happened to the other dress?
Patch asked at last. I followed his gaze to the Jessica Rabbit gown. I heaved a sigh.
Marcy thought I'd look better in red.
What do you think?
I think Marcy and Dabria would be instant friends. Patch laughed low, the sound of it tingling my skin as seductively as if he'd kissed it.
Do you want my opinion?
Might as well, since everyone else seems to have weighed in. He sat on my bed, leaning back nonchalantly on his elbows.
Try it on.
It's probably a little snug, I said, suddenly feeling conspicuous. Marcy tends to buy down when it comes to sizing. He merely smiled. It has a slit up the thigh. His smile deepened. Locking myself in my closet, I tugged on the dress. It moved like liquid over every curve. The slit fell open halfway up my thigh, exposing my leg. Stepping out into the low light, I swept my hair off my neck. Zip it up? Patch's eyes made a slow assessment of me, sharpening to vivid black.
I'm going to have a hard time sending you off with Scott in that dress. Just a heads up, if you come home and the dress looks even slightly tampered with, I will track Scott down, and when I find him, it won't be pretty.
I'll relay the message.
If you tell me where he's hiding, I'll relay it myself.
I had to work not to smile. Something tells me your message would be a lot more direct.
Let's just say he'd get the point.
Patch took my wrist and reeled me in for a kiss, but something wasn't right. His face grew hazy at the edges, dissolving into the background. When his lips met mine, I hardly felt it. Worse, I felt myself pulling away from him like a piece of tape peeling back from glass. Patch noticed it too and swore under his breath. What's happening? I asked.
It's the half-breed, he growled.
Scott?
He's knocking at your bedroom window. Any second now you're going to wake up. Is this the first time he's come prowling around at night?
I thought it might be safer not to answer. Patch was in my dream and couldn't do anything rash, but that didn't mean it was a good idea to stir up the competition between them any further. We'll finish this tomorrow, was all I had time to say before the dream and Patch swirled into the recesses of my mind. The dream snapped apart, and sure enough, Scott stood in my bedroom closing the window behind him.
Rise and shine, he said.
I groaned. Scott, you have to stop this. I have school first thing tomorrow, plus I was in the middle of a really good dream, I grumbled as an afterthought.
About me?
He said, flashing a cocky smile. I simply said, this better be good.
Better than good. I got a gig playing bass for a band called Serpentine. We're opening at the Devil's Handbag next weekend. Band members get 2 free tickets, and you're one of the lucky recipients.
With a flourish, he threw down 2 tickets on my bed. I was growing more awake by the second.
Are you crazy? You can't be in a band. You're supposed to be hiding from Hank. Going to the dance with me is one thing, but this is taking things too far.
His smile died, his expression souring.
I thought you'd be happy for me, Gray. I've spent the past couple months hiding. Now I'm living in a cave and scavenging for food, which is getting harder and harder to find with winter coming. I have to force myself into the ocean 3 times a week for a bath, and I spend the rest of the day shivering by the fire. I have no TV, no cell. I'm completely cut off. You want the truth? I'm sick of hiding. Living on the run isn't living. I might as well be dead.
He stroked the black hand's ring, still snug around his finger.
I'm glad you talked me into wearing this again. I haven't felt this alive in months. If Hank tries anything, he's going to be in for a big surprise. My powers have intensified.
I kicked out of my blankets and stood up to him. Scott, Hank knows you're in town. He's got his men searching for you. You have to stay hidden until Cheshvan, at least, I threw out, believing Hank's interest in Scott would wane once his full plans, whatever they were, unfolded.
I keep telling myself that, but what if he's not? He remarked blandly. What if he's forgotten about me and all this is for nothing?
I know he's looking for you.
Did you hear him say it?
He asked, calling my bluff. Something like that. Given his current state, I couldn't bring myself to tell him where the information had come from. Scott wouldn't take Patch's advice seriously, and then I'd have to explain why I was mixed up with Patch in the first place. A reliable source told me. He wagged his head back and forth.
You're trying to scare me. I appreciate the gesture, he said cynically, but I've made up my mind. I've thought this over, and whatever happens, I can face it. A few months of freedom is better than a lifetime in prison.
You can't let Hank find you, I insisted. If he does, he'll put you in one of his reinforced prisons. He'll torture you. You have to ride this out a little longer, please, I begged. Just a few more weeks?
Screw it, I'm out of here. I'm playing at the devil's handbag whether you come or not.
I didn't understand Scott's sudden blasé attitude. Up until now, he'd been meticulous about staying away from Hank. Now he was putting his neck on the line for something as trivial as a high school dance. And now a gig? A horrible thought struck me. Scott, you said the Black Hand's ring connects you to him. Is there any way it's drawing you closer to him? Maybe the ring does more than give you heightened powers. Maybe it's some kind of beacon. Scott snorted.
The Black Hand isn't going to catch me.
You're wrong. And if you keep up that attitude, he's going to catch you sooner than you think, I said gently but firmly. I reached for his arm, but he drew away. He ducked out the window, slamming it shut behind him. Chapter 25. It was Friday, and voting for homecoming royalty was scheduled to take place during lunch. At the moment, I was sitting in health, watching the clock inch toward the dismissal bell. Instead of worrying that hundreds of people I had to spend the next 2 years of my life with might burst into hysterics upon seeing my name on the ballot, and in less than 10 minutes' time, I concentrated on Scott. I needed to find a way to talk him back inside the cave through Cheshvan, and as a precaution, I needed a way to get him to take off the Black Hand's ring. If that didn't work, I needed a way to contain him. I vaguely wondered if I could recruit Patch's help. Surely he knew of several good places to detain a Nafeel. But would he trouble himself over Scott? And even if I managed to talk Patch into cooperating, how would I ever earn back Scott's trust? He'd view it as the ultimate betrayal. I couldn't even reason with him that it was for his own safety. He made it clear last night that he no longer valued his life. I'm sick of hiding. I might as well be dead. In the middle of my thoughts, the intercom above Miss Drabowski's desk buzzed. The secretary's voice came through, carefully measured.
Miss Drabowski? Pardon the interruption. Would you please send Nora Gray to the attendance office?
A touch of sympathy crept into her tone. Miss Drabowski tapped her foot impatiently, apparently not appreciating being cut off mid-sentence. She flicked her hand in my direction.
Take your things, Nora. I don't think you'll make it back before the bell.
I scooped my textbook into my backpack and headed for the door, wondering what this was all about. I knew of only 2 reasons students were called to the attendance office. For ditching, and for excused absences. As far as I knew, neither applied to me. At the attendance office, I tugged on the door, and that's when I saw him. Hank Miller sat in the lounge, his shoulders hunched, his expression haggard. His chin was propped on his fist, and his eyes stared blankly ahead. Reflexively, I backed away. But Hank saw me and immediately rose to his feet. The deep sympathy etched on his face wrung my stomach sick.
What is it?
I found myself stammering. He avoided looking directly at me.
There's been an accident.
His words rattled around inside me. My initial thought was, why would I care if Hank had been in an accident? And why had he come all the way to school to tell me?
Your mom fell down the stairs. She was wearing heels and lost her balance. She has a concussion.
A tide of panic crashed over me. I said something that might have been no or now. No, this couldn't be happening. I needed to see my mom now. All of a sudden, I regretted every sharp word I'd said to her these past couple of weeks. My worst fears came crawling in from every direction. I'd already lost my dad. If I lost my mom...
How serious is it? My voice wobbled. Deep down, I knew I didn't want to cry in front of Hank, a trivial matter of pride that shattered the moment I pictured my mom's face. I shut my eyes, trapping the tears.
When I left the hospital, they couldn't tell me anything. I came straight here to get you. I've already signed you out with the attendant secretary, Hank explained. I'll drive you to the hospital.
He held the door for me and I mechanically ducked under his arm. I felt my feet carry me down the hall. Outside, the sun was too bright. I wondered if I would remember this day forever. I wondered if I would have reason to look back on it and feel the same intolerable emotions I'd felt upon learning my dad had been murdered. Confusion, bitterness, helplessness, abandonment. I choked, no longer able to hold back a sob.
Hank unlocked his Land Cruiser without a word. He raised his hand once as if to give my shoulder a consoling squeeze, then made a fist and dropped it. And that's when it hit me. Things were looking a little too convenient. Maybe it was my natural aversion to Hank, but it crossed my mind that he could be lying to get me inside his car. I want to call the hospital, I said abruptly. I want to see if they have an update. Hank frowned. We're on our way there now. In 10 minutes, you can talk to her doctor in person.
Excuse me if I'm a little worried, but this is my mom we're talking about, I said softly, but with unmistakable firmness.
Hank dialed a number on his phone and handed it to me. The hospital's automated system picked up, asking me to listen carefully to the following options or stay on the line for an operator. A minute later, I was connected with an operator.
Can you tell me if Blythe Gray was admitted today? I asked the woman, avoiding Hank's gaze.
Yes, we have a Blythe Gray on record.
I exhaled. Just because Hank hadn't lied about my mom's accident didn't mean he was innocent. All these years living in the farmhouse, and never once had she fallen down the stairs.
This is her daughter. Can you give me an update on her condition?
I can leave a message for her doctor to call you.
Thanks, I said, leaving my cell phone number.
Any news? Hank asked.
How do you know she fell down the stairs? I quizzed him. Did you see her fall?
We'd arranged to meet for lunch. When she didn't answer the door, I let myself in. That's when I found her at the bottom of the stairs.
If he detected any suspicion in my voice, he didn't show it. If anything, he sounded morose, loosening his tie and wiping sweat off his brow.
If anything happens to her, he muttered to himself, but he didn't finish the thought. Should we go?
Get into the car, a voice inside my head commanded. Just like that, my mind emptied of all suspicion. I could grasp only one thought. I needed to go with Hank. There was something strange about the voice, but I couldn't place it through my muddled mind. All my reasoning power seemed to float away, making room for that one continuous order. Get into the car. I looked at Hank, who blinked benignly. I had the impulse to accuse him of something, but why should I? He was here to help. He cared about my mom. Obediently, I slid inside the Land Cruiser. I didn't know how long we rode in silence. My thoughts were a whirlwind until suddenly Hank cleared his voice.
I want you to know she's in the best hands. I requested that Dr. Howlett oversee her care. Dr. Howlett and I were roommates at the University of Maine before he went on to Johns Hopkins.
Dr. Howlett. I juggled his name a moment, and then it came to me. He was the doctor who'd cared for me after I first returned home. After Hank saw fit to return me, I corrected myself. And now it turned out Hank and Dr. Howlett were friends? Any numbness I felt was quickly eclipsed by anxiety. I felt a swift and instant distrust of Dr. Howlett. As I was frantically considering the connection between the two men, a car pulled up beside Hank's. For one split moment, I didn't see anything wrong with the picture, and then the car slammed into the Land Cruiser. The Land Cruiser careened sideways, grating against the guardrail. A shower of sparks flew from the scraping metal,
I barely had time to yelp when we were battered again. Hank overcorrected, the rear of the Land Cruiser fishtailing violently.
They're trying to run us off the road, Hank yelled. Get your seatbelt on.
Who are they? I shrieked, double-checking that my seatbelt was fastened. Hank jerked the wheel to avoid another hit, and the abrupt movement jarred my attention back to the road ahead. It curved sharply to the left as we approached a deep ravine. Hank stomped the gas, trying to outrace the other car, a tan El Camino. The El Camino gunned forward, swerving into the lane ahead. Three heads were visible through the windshield, and from what I could tell, all were male. An image of Gabe, Dominic, and Jeremiah flashed to mind. It was pure speculation, since I couldn't make out their faces, but even the mere suggestion caused me to yell out, "Stop the car!" I shouted. "It's a trap! Put the car in reverse!"
"They destroyed my car!" Hank snarled, accelerating into a chase.
The El Camino screeched around the bend, skidding across the solid white line. Hank followed, veering dangerously close to the guardrail. The shoulder of the road dropped away, plunging into the ravine. From way up here, it looked like a giant bowl of air, with Hank racing recklessly along the rim. My stomach turned circles, and I clutched the armrest. The El Camino's taillights blazed red.
"Look out!"
I screamed. I flattened one hand to the window and the other against Hank's shoulder, trying to stop the inevitable. Hank jerked the wheel hard, sending the Land Cruiser up on two wheels. I was thrown forward, my seatbelt catching hard across my chest, my head colliding with the window. My vision clouded, and loud noises seemed to descend on me from every direction. Crunching, shattering, piercing noises that exploded in my ears. I thought I heard Hank growl something.
"Damn fallen angels!"
But then I was flying. No. Not flying, tumbling, over and over. I didn't remember landing, but when my mind registered again, I was on my back. Not inside the Land Cruiser, somewhere else. Dirt, leaves, sharp rocks biting into my skin. Cold, pain, hard. Cold, pain, hard. My brain couldn't move beyond three chanted words. I saw them slide across my vision.
"Nora!"
Hank yelled, his voice sounding far away. I was sure my eyes were open, but I couldn't make out any one object. Bright light I couldn't see past stretched from one edge of my vision to the other. I attempted to rise. The directions I gave my muscles were clear, but there was a breach somewhere along the lines. I couldn't move. Hands grasped my ankles first, then my wrists. My body glided through the leaves and dirt, making a strange rustling noise. I licked my lips, trying to call out to Hank, but when my mouth opened, the wrong words came out. Cold, pain, hard. Cold, pain, hard. I wanted to rattle myself out of the stupor.
"No," I screamed inside my head. "No, no, no! Patch, help! Patch, patch, patch!"
"Cold, pain, hard," I muttered incoherently. Before I could correct myself, it was too late. My mouth was stitched closed, as were my eyes. Solid hands grasped my shoulders, shaking me.
"Can you hear me, Nora? Don't try to get up. Stay on your back. I'm going to get you to the hospital."
My eyes popped open. Trees swayed overhead. Sunlight spilled through their branches, casting strange shadows that altered the world from light to dark and back again. Hank Miller bent over me. His face was cut up, blood trickling down, blood smearing his cheeks, blood matting his hair. His lips were moving, but it hurt too much to make sense of his words. I turned away. Cold. Pain. Hard. I woke in a hospital, my bed behind a white cotton curtain. The room was peacefully, yet strangely quiet. My toes and fingers tingled, and my head might as well have been strewn with cobwebs. "Drugs," I mildly noted. A different face leaned over mine. Dr. Howlett smiled, but not enough to show teeth.
"You took a frightful hit, young lady. Plenty of bruising, but nothing's broken. I had the nurses give you ibuprofen, and I'll give you a prescription before you go. You're going to feel tender for a few days. Considering the circumstances, I'd say you should count your blessings."
"Hank?" I managed to ask, my lips paper dry. Dr. Howlett shook his head, rumbling a short laugh.
"You're gonna hate hearing this, but he pulled through without a scratch. Hardly seems fair."
Through the haze, I tried to reason. Something wasn't right, and then my memory opened.
"No, he was cut up. He was bleeding badly."
"You're mistaken. Hank came in wearing more of your blood than his own. You got the worst of it by far.
But I saw him.
Hank Miller is in pristine shape. He cut me off. And once your stitches fall out, you will be too. As soon as the nurses finish checking these bandages, you'll be good to go.
Underneath it all, I knew I should panic. There were too many questions, too few answers. Cold, pain, hard. Cold, pain, hard. The glow of taillights, the crash, the ravine.
This will help, Dr. Howlett said, surprising me with a prick to my arm.
Fluid streamed from the needle into my blood with nothing more than a faint sting. But I just regained consciousness, I murmured, a pleasant chemical exhaustion washing through me. How can I be okay already? I don't feel right.
You'll make a faster recovery at home, he chuckled. Here you'll have nurses poking and prodding you all night.
All night? It's already evening, but it was just noon. Before Hank, health class, I never had lunch.
It's been a rough day, Dr. Howlett said, nodding complacently.
Under the layers of drugs, I wanted to scream. Instead, a mere sigh escaped. I laid a hand on my stomach. I feel funny.
MRI confirmed you don't have internal bleeding. Take it easy for the next few days and you'll be up and running in no time.
He gave my shoulder a playful squeeze.
But I can't promise you'll feel like climbing into another car anytime soon.
Somewhere in the middle of the fog, I remembered my mom. Is Hank with my mom? Is she okay? Can I see her? Does she know about the car crash?
Your mom is making a very speedy recovery, he assured me. She's still in ICU and can't have visitors, but she should be moved to her own room by morning. You can come back and see her then.
He leaned down as though to make me his co-conspirator.
Between us, if it weren't for the red tape, I'd let you sneak in to see her now. She had a pretty nasty concussion, and while there was memory lost at first, considering her condition when Hank first brought her in, I think it's safe to say she'll pull a 180.
He patted my cheek.
Luck must run in the family.
Luck, I repeated lethargically. But I had an alarming feeling stirring inside me, indicating that luck had nothing to do with either of our recoveries. And maybe not our accidents, either.
Chapter 26. After Dr. Howlett gave me clearance to leave, I rode the elevator down to the main lobby. On the way, I dialed V. I didn't have a ride home, and I hoped it was still early enough that her mom would let her rescue a stranded friend. The elevator eased to a stop, and the doors glided open. My phone clattered at my feet.
"Hello, Nora," Hank said, standing directly in front of me.
3 counts passed before I summoned my voice.
"Going up?" I asked, hoping I sounded calm.
"Actually, I was looking for you."
"I'm in a hurry," I said apologetically, scooping up my phone.
"I thought you might need a ride home. I had one of my boys bring over a rental from the dealership."
"Thanks, but I've already called a friend."
His smile was plastic. "At least let me see you to the doors."
"I need to stop by the restrooms first," I hedged. "Please don't wait. Really, I'm fine. I'm sure Marcy is anxious to see you."
"Your mother would want me to see you home safely."
His eyes were bloodshot, his whole expression weary, but I didn't for one moment think it was from his role as the grieving boyfriend. Dr. Howlett could insist all he wanted that Hank had arrived at the hospital unscathed, but I knew the truth. He'd come out of the crash worse than I had, worse even than the crash warranted. His face had resembled pulverized meat, and while his Nephilim blood had cured him almost instantly, I'd known from the moment he'd shaken me out of unconsciousness, and I'd taken that first blurry look at him, that something had happened to him after I blacked out. He could deny it up and down, but his condition had resembled being mauled by tigers. He was haggard and exhausted because he'd battled a group of fallen angels today. At least, that was my current working theory. As I traced my way back through the events, it was the only explanation that made sense. Damn fallen angels. Weren't those the words Hank had sworn viciously a fraction of a moment before the crash? He clearly hadn't planned on running into them. So what had he planned to happen? I had a terrible feeling churning inside me. One, I realized in retrospect, I'd been dangling at the back of my mind ever since Hank had shown up at school. What if Hank had, in fact, set the day's events up? Could he have pushed my mom down the stairs? Dr. Howlett said she'd initially suffered from amnesia, a device Hank could have used to keep her from remembering the truth.
Then he'd picked me up from school. For what? What was I missing?
I smell rubber burning, Hank said. You're thinking hard about something.
His voice jerked me to the present. I stared up at him, wishing I could glean his motives from his expression. It was then that I realized his eyes were just as fixed on me. His gaze was so intent, it was almost trance-like. Whatever conclusion I'd been about to draw swam away. My thoughts tipped sideways. Suddenly they were all out of order and I couldn't remember what I'd been pondering. The harder I tried to remember, the more my thoughts careened into an abyss at the back of my mind. A cocoon stretched around my mind, wrapping any cognitive ability tightly out of reach. It was happening all over again. The muddled, heavy sensation of being unable to control my own thoughts. "Has your friend agreed to pick you up, Nora?" he asked with that same laser-like attention. Somewhere deep inside, I knew I shouldn't tell Hank the truth. I knew I should say V was coming for me. But what reason did I have to lie to him? "I called V, but she didn't answer," I admitted.
"I'm happy to give you a ride, Nora,"
I nodded. "Yes, thank you." My mind was jumbled, and I couldn't snap out of it. I strolled down the corridor beside Hank, my hands cold and shaking. Why was I trembling? It was nice of Hank to offer me a ride. He cared about my mom enough to go out of his way for me, didn't he? The ride home was uneventful, and at the farmhouse, Hank followed me inside. I stopped just inside the door. "What are you doing?"
"Your mom would want me to look after you tonight."
"You're staying the whole night?" My hands started to shake again, and through my cotton-filled head, I knew I had to find a way to make him leave. It wasn't a good idea to let him sleep over. But how could I force him out? He was stronger, and even if I could get him out, my mom had recently given him a house key. He'd come right back inside. "You're letting cold air in," Hank said, gently prying my hands from the door. "Let me help." That's right, I thought with a smile at my own muddle-headed silliness. He wanted to help. Hank tossed his keys on the counter and sank into the couch, kicking his feet up on the ottoman. He angled his eyes at the cushion next to him. "Want to unwind with a show?" "I'm tired," I said, hugging myself now that the awful quivering had spread above my elbows.
"You've had a long day. Sleep might be just what the doctor ordered."
I fought through the oppressive cloud suffocating my brain, but it seemed there was no end to the thick darkness. "Hank," I asked quizzically, "why do you really want to stay here tonight?" He chuckled.
"You look positively frightened, Nora. Be a good girl and go up to bed. It's not like I'm going to strangle you in your sleep."
In my bedroom, I scooted the dresser in front of the door, effectively blocking it. I had no idea why I did it. I had no reason to fear Hank. He was keeping a promise to my mom. He wanted to protect me. If he knocked, I would push the dresser aside and open the door. And yet, I crawled into bed and closed my eyes. Exhaustion raked down my body, and by now I was shivering violently. I wondered if I was catching a cold. When my mind began to feel heavy, I didn't fight it. Colors and shapes seesawed in and out of focus. My thoughts slid deeper into my subconscious. Hank was right. It had been a long day. I needed sleep. It wasn't until I found myself standing at the threshold of Patch's studio that I began to sense that something wasn't quite right. The haze scattered from my brain, and I realized Hank had mind-tricked me into submission. Flinging open Patch's front door and dashing inside, I shouted his name. I found him in the kitchen, slouched on a bar stool. One look at me and he swung off and crossed to me.
"Nora, how did you get here? You're inside my head," he said with surprise. "Are you dreaming?"
His eyes flicked back and forth across my face, hunting for an answer.
"I don't know. I think so. I crawled into bed feeling a desperate need to talk to you, and here I am. Are you asleep?"
He shook his head.
"I'm awake, but you're eclipsing my thoughts. I don't know how you did it. Only a powerful Nephil or fallen angel could pull off something like this."
"Something terrible happened." I threw myself into his arms, trying to dissipate my convulsive shivers. "First, my mom fell down the stairs, and on our way to the hospital to see her,